This is the week of May 22nd and the music of Andre Lewis at AndreLewis.com. Hi, I'm Marlena and you're listening to the Marlena Program, heard weekly at this time on ACB Radio Mainstream. For the next 2 hours, give or take, we'll be taking your phone calls at 866-666-7926. Love to hear your thoughts, your comments, your ideas, your suggestions, your opinions, whatever. Why don't you come on in, get comfy, spend some time with me, and give me a call, huh? Right here on Marlena. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another Marlena program. It's going to be a good one tonight. We've got an absolutely fascinating guest that we're going to bring in here in just a moment. Let me get the housekeeping details out of the way first. If you are listening to this program at any time other than 6 to 7 Pacific, 9 to 10 Eastern in North America, or a very bright and early 1 UTC on a Monday morning, if you're hearing this at any time other than that, it's a repeat. So put your feet up and get ready for a great show. If you are listening live during that time, the number, as always, to call is 866-666-7926. Each year around this time, I try to bring onto the program presidents or program chairs from the various ACB special interest affiliates. And we have just such a person joining us tonight, but we also are very fortunate because not only is Kathy Skivers the president of the ACB Government Employees Group, but she is also a woman with a tremendous amount of ACB history and history within the blindness movement itself. Please join me in welcoming. Hello, Kathy. How are you feeling?
Hi, Marlena. I'm sounding at least, and that's a little better than earlier in the week when I wasn't able to sound.
So. Oh, my gosh. I know you're cold. Oh, dear.
Well, we're better.
Well, we appreciate that you're able to be with us, and don't worry, if you need to cough, we'd rather have you cough than choke, so just go ahead and cough.
We'll try to do that as little as possible.
Well, don't worry about it. I have a wonderful audience, and this is a very relaxed show, so be comfortable. Let's talk a bit first about the ACBGE affiliate. What is that affiliate?
That's the American Council of the Blind Government Employees. We are made up of people who are currently working for federal, state, or local government agencies, and also those like myself who are retired from one of those groups.
And about how many folks do you have in your affiliate?
Now just about 40, I think.
Wow.
We're kind of a small affiliate, but we're from all over the country, and we've managed to do a lot, even though we're not the biggest affiliate around.
Well, I think that's a good size for the population that you represent, and maybe, you know, I had Butch Arnold was on this show last year and to talk about the BFLAG program, and he told me this year that they got 5 new members after this show, so you never know. You never know.
I'm hoping that happens, and I hope that some of our members who no longer are belonging will come back and join, because it really has always been a wonderful thing to have government employment jobs. They've seemed to hold a future for you and for people like myself and all of the others. And to have it now, it's really kind of being threatened in many ways. So we want people to take an interest in it, and whether they actually belong to the government employees, if they do, come on in and join us. If not, then be all the help you can to the people around you, letting them know that we do exist and we would welcome their input.
Let's talk a little bit about the program for this summer and that issue of the job exportation. I know that's key on the minds of so many people in ACBGE.
Yes, we always, every year, we have a fun time and we have a work time. And so we begin always on Sunday between 3 and 5 p.m. with, we call it a wine and cheese mixer. Actually, you can't always be sure if you're going to have wine and cheese or what you're going to have, but it's always good and you sure have a lot of fun. And you meet some of the nicest people you'll ever want to meet. And we usually have a raffle. I think we will this year. We're going to have one more board meeting to determine whether we're going to have prizes that are already donated or whether we're going to, what we're going to do with that. But we'll be having some kind of a thing. That's our social. And people, when they get their program, can sign up and come. You don't have to be a member to join us. But a luncheon is on Thursday, and it starts at 12:30. I always get the AMs and PMs mixed up. I might have them coming in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I think
lunch is at lunchtime. I think it's
PM. PM, yes.
Yeah, good.
Yes.
No wonder my kids had trouble getting to school when they were supposed to get there. Anyway, it's going to be at 12:30 on Thursday. We're going to have a very nice luncheon. And we've invited two speakers. First of all, we will have a business meeting and speakers. And during our business meeting, it's time to elect officers this year. I'm finishing my fourth and final year as president of the group. We have time limits, and regrettably, I'm not even going to get to be there, and I really wish I could be because we're having two speakers after our business meeting that are just tremendous. We're having Ralph Neese. He's president of People for the American Way, and it's a national advocacy organization fighting for the rights of all disabled and disadvantaged groups in the country, and he's our first speaker. And our members are finding out the hard way, some of our members, that government employment may no longer be a real stable career. Some jobs have been lost, some offices have closed, and there's been a lot of outsourcing, and this is all creating hardships on state, local, and federal levels for the workers. So we're particularly happy to be having Ralph come and talk to us about some of the issues that may be causing this kind of a problem. Now, we always have been in government. Our thrust have always been toward employment. Whether you're working for the government, it's important to us that blind, visually impaired, and disabled people be working someplace. If not with the government, then someplace where they can make a decent living and have wages comparable to everybody else's. Our second speaker is going to be Doug Wakefield, and he wrote, I understand, the implementing regulations for Section 508, and those regulations are being revised, and whenever anybody revises anything in the government these days, it worries me. I don't know about the rest of you,
yeah.
But Doug will be suggesting what might be included in these recommendations to give more definitive guidance to employees who are blind and visually impaired. And I really think, Marlena, that those two speakers will bring a lot to us and maybe give some direction to our group and through us maybe to the American Council on how best to work on employment for blind and visually impaired people.
Well, that sounds like a fascinating opportunity on both fronts, both what I'm sure Doug will talk about. Doug is just a very brilliant person, and I'm always just in awe of how much Doug knows about this 508 stuff, because, boy, I'll tell you, it's confusing, and Ralph Neese as well to be there. That sounds fabulous. Let me just let listeners know that the line is open. We've just opened it up. If you want to talk to Kathy about this or some other things, or you just want to say hello, you can do that at 866-666-7926. What'll happen when you call is if we're in the middle of a sentence or something, we'll put you on hold, you'll hear us, and then we'll bring you right in as soon as we can. Kathy, let's talk a little bit about this exportation of jobs. What kind of an impact is that having on people who are blind or visually impaired?
Well, a lot of jobs are being closed out. For instance, IRS has closed at least three offices that we're aware of, one in Boston, one in Chicago, and one in Houston. I know the one in Chicago result was that of the 5 blind and visually impaired people working there, 3 retired, 1 was transferred off to Indianapolis, and another one was transferred, I think, into another job. And what we want to find out is what is happening to them. We're not sure. We know that, and it's not government work, but we know at one time medical transcription was a tremendous field for employment for blind and visually impaired people. And now a lot of that has been outsourced overseas. And we know, too, that there are many other things that have been taken overseas. Reservationists. Sometimes if you call to make a hotel reservation, you'll be talking to some nice person in India or Afghanistan or someplace. And those are jobs, some of those things we could be doing here and we should be doing to employ people. You know, I always get amazed when people get all excited about the employment ratio. You know, you hear, oh my, it's 4.8% for the first time in we don't know how many years, 6 years. Well, you know what? That percentage for disabled people that doesn't seem to get many people excited except those of us who are disabled, blind, or visually impaired. We kind of take note of that figure being up there. I think I read the other day somebody thinks it's down to 50%. I'd like to know how they got that.
Wow, so would I, because I keep reading that it's, well, sometimes I read it's 72, and then I read it was 83, and in the announcement for this show, I think I phrased it at with the unemployment ratio being at or near 75%, because that's kind of what I'm seeing.
Yes, and 70%. Is what it was before all these people started being transferred. And we have people who work with Social Security Administration who've been there for 30 years, and that group's getting to retire now. We wonder what rehabilitation and other people are doing about replacing those people with more blind and visually impaired people, and if we can keep those jobs open.
Absolutely. We've got a caller. Let's bring them on in.
Great.
Hi there, caller. You're with Kathy and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, Marlena. This is Kelly. I just wanted to ask Kathy, what was it about medical transcription? Because medical transcription is my career what I want to do and what I'm going to get my certificate in.
Okay, Kelly,
yes,
could you turn your computer down?
Ma'am?
Can you turn your computer down?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
It's louder than you almost.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry about that.
Okay, so your first, let's take your questions one at a time. So
okay,
what's
sure.
your first question?
Okay, what was it about medical transcription and about why some people didn't hire blind people to do it or something?
No, what I was saying was that medical transcription has always been a great source of employment for blind and visually impaired people. And now a lot of medical transcription is being sent overseas. Here in California, we have a large hospital that used to employ 18 people. They weren't all blind or visually impaired, but they're down to 6. And what came about, we heard in some testimony given out here, was that they had outsourced it to Florida, to Texas, and eventually to overseas, to Afghanistan.
Oh,
and the hospital wasn't even aware it had happened until it came out on the Internet that if they didn't pay this lady that they owed some money to, that she was going to put the medical records up on the
my God.
Internet. And they real fast paid her, I'm told. Anyway, they pointed out that they weren't aware this was even happening, so we hope they've changed that. But if they continue to do that, and some states are taking their state jobs, and they are outsourcing all kinds of jobs, and I just was pointing out that this is one area that could be affected unless we get into it and see what's really happening with your kind of job. And good luck with it, by the way, when you get there.
And did you have a second question?
Also, I just want to ask why are so many blind people being turned down at a different job? Is it because sighted people, is it because a lot of employers don't want to hire blind people to work, or they just don't?
Kelly.
Am I making any sense?
Yeah, I can tell you why I think it is, and I think most of us have been around as long as sliced bread like I have, kind of think that. It is the people who are employers quite often don't realize what a valuable asset a blind or visually impaired or disabled person will be in their office or in their workplace, because when we get a job, we need that job, we want that job, and most of us take care of our jobs. But they just don't understand that blind people can work as effectively as anybody else. I don't think, and they hire just anybody that walks in the door. They don't need to be concerned about what they can and can't do. And
no.
It's a matter of public education for all of us to do, and just keep at it. And Marlena may have another take on that, but I think that's my opinion, Kelly, that people just aren't educated.
Absolutely.
About us.
Absolutely.
That employers aren't educated about blind people.
Well, I think,
right.
I think, yeah, employers and the general public at large.
And people in general.
Yeah, I mean, I do, in the business world, I do a fair amount of training on providing customer service when your customer is disabled. And my company has a whole workshop that we do. And one of the things that we do is we ask people, rather than to simulate a disability, we ask people to imagine a disability. And we give them some limitations of what we want them to consider in terms of choices. And blindness is a choice that we want them to consider. Then we go around the room and we ask them to say, we give them a minute, you know, to kind of think about it. And we go around the room and ask them then to say why they chose that particular disability. And sometimes it's because they have a family member who's deaf or Rarely, almost never, do they choose blindness. And when we ask them why, they say, I would never want to live like that. And I'm sitting right there, and I mean, you know, here I am, a totally blind, I'm their trainer. And it's really hard for me not to take that personally, but I'm sitting there thinking, golly, it's 2006, and
well,
I'm still looked at as a blind person in this way, so...
Well, I've at the school that I go to, Kathy, I've met so many people that are blind and they work there, and that they have jobs, and I just thought I would love to get out and get out of school and get me a job.
You'll get out of school and you'll get you a job, and you'll be a representative. I always say to every blind person who works and who really wants to get out there and try, whether you like it or not, you're an ambassador for blind and visually impaired
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
And you sound like you're going to be a good one. You'll find a job. Just make up your mind what you want to do. Get the best training you can get. And don't ever let people get you down.
Well,
you know how
I
smart
won't.
You are and how much you know, and you're going to do it.
I won't. I've already got what I want to do. It took me a little while because I had so many problems before I came to Houston, but still... I'm glad I got my mind made up now.
Well, you keep on that course, Miss Kelly.
Oh, I will.
All righty.
All right.
Take care.
Nice talking to you, Kathy.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926 is, if you didn't already know, that's the number to call to chat with Kathy Skyvers. Yeah, I think that this unemployment thing, man... It is so closely tied to the image of blindness. It is just phenomenal to me in this day and age that people still have this negative, dark sort of their life must be dreadful image. And I don't know. I guess you just keep chipping away at it to try to change that, huh?
Do you ever notice how loud people will talk to a blind person and make sure you hear them?
Well, and
they hear you?
And we've got another call. We're going to bring you in just a second, caller. But you know what's interesting is I was telling you earlier today, Kathy, Gary, who we call here on this program, Gary the Board Guy, and I don't tell him how I spell board, he's a wheelchair user. And so when we go out, you can see it. You can see people going, oh my God, which one of them should I address myself to? And 9 times out of 10, they're much more comfortable talking with Gary than they are with me. And that, it's just absolute. Let's bring this caller in. Hi there, you're with Kathy and Marlena. Who's this?
Yeah, my name's Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, Mike, is this your first time calling?
Yes.
Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Michigan.
Well, Mike from Michigan. Hey, that's a pretty good handle. I'm going to call you that all the time now.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I use JAWS on a standalone. It's great. But where I work, I think JAWS is really lacking when it comes to using emulators and networks.
Right.
They need to improve dramatically. I think that's why blind people are not getting employed, because JAWS is not keeping up with the times with emulators and networks.
Well, of course, and I mean, I'm not a JAWS user. I use Window Eyes, and I don't know, I don't know if Window Eyes would solve your problem or not, but I think the point is that our technology needs to keep up with current employment trends. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yes, and it's not, because, like I said, JAWS or probably Window Eyes works great with the standalone, but when it gets on the emulators and the networks, I think that's why there's not as many people, blind people, employed, where if they start updating to use emulators and networks more, JAWS and Window Eyes, let's put both of them there.
I think you're probably right, because I know that we've had a lot of our government employees talking about when they need updating on their technology, it doesn't always come through, and they have to argue about it, and sometimes they get the equipment they need, and sometimes they don't. And, of course, it's much easier to say that you don't know how to operate something than it is to get you the equipment that you really need. But technology and the up-to-date kind that you have to have is a big, big thing you need. Mike, in Michigan, do you have a rehab department that will help you get equipment to retain the job that you have?
Yes. But the
they will
thing
do that?
The thing is, the way companies are programming stuff, even with XP Professional, that it's not working with the standard screen readers anymore.
Yeah.
I think they're over-programming and not looking at accessibility.
Yeah, I certainly think that's part of the problem. I think that if you work for a federal entity, and I don't know if Doug Wakefield might be listening or not, but I'm sure if he is and I'm wrong, he'll call in and tell us. But it's my understanding that, and Kathy, you may know this as well, that if you work for the federal government, that whatever they use has to be accessible and comply with Section 508. Now, I don't know if they really follow that. I don't, you know, maybe some federal employees will call us tonight and tell us how it's really working. But, you know, there's so many legs to the problem.
All I know, when it gets to an emulator out on a network, it's a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, yeah.
Last year we had a speaker come and talk to us. And his job is, he's with an agency known as CAP, and he was there to talk to us. They're connected with the Department of Defense, and the CAP program is just to find equipment for people who need it. And they have money available, which most agencies say they don't have. And if a federal agency has a problem and they don't get what they need, they can call them, and they'll help them get it. But, you know, it amazes me that his name was Mark Rue, R-E-W, and he came and talked to us. And it's amazing that with that money available, some agencies aren't calling there and asking for help. They will use the fact that they can't get the money to give you what you need, but they won't call them when the money's available. They would just call and ask.
Do you work for a federal agency, Mike?
No.
Ah, okay.
But like I said, I don't know. And I was speaking to a rehab person. They were agreeing with me that when it comes to a network, and the emulators are the whole problem. They're not really compatible with the screen readers out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I think there's more unemployment of blind people because of the emulators.
Yeah, and the whole technology thing, for sure.
Right.
All right, well, thanks, Mike. Hey, I hope you'll call me again.
All right, thank you.
All right, have a good night. Bye-bye. 866.
You know, Marlena, that would be a good thing to bring to the technology committee.
Yes, I happen to
ACB.
I happen to be on that committee, actually.
Yeah, well, why don't you bring it to them?
Yes, ma'am. 866-666-7926. Let's go back a little bit and tell me a little bit about who you are, Miss Kathy Skivers.
Oh, goodness. I'm immediate past president of the California Council of the Blind. I went to my first convention of the California Council of the Blind and my first meeting of the California Council, one of their chapters, in 1949. That was long. Most people were around nowadays. But anyway, I was a president, the second president of the first American affiliate in California, American Council affiliate. Julie Esterly was the first, and I came in that time. I finished a year of Julie's time and took 6 years of my own, so I was president of American Council affiliate, which was not the California Council, back from 65 to 72. And then once again, when the groups combined out here, and CCB joined the California Council, joined the American Council affiliate, we got together. I found myself president from 97 to 2002. And so that was 6 years, and it was very interesting to having been kind of at each end of the thing. When we were separated and then when we got back together to be present, it's been kind of fun and watch the organization grow. I'm history and awards chair for California Council as well as the chair for legislation. We keep very busy with that out here, as you may know. And I have 5 sons, which I think is probably the best thing I ever did. I had 5 sons. I still have 4. The last one in 80. I'm a retired IRS employee. Of course, everybody, when you say IRS, they all go, because I was very happy that they paid me and allowed me to keep my children and myself together when my husband was killed on the 4th of July, 1976, and I found myself a widow with children to bring up, and boy, was I happy to have IRS in my pocket, or I was in theirs. I don't know how that worked. They paid me, and I paid them back.
We have a caller. Let's bring them in, but I do want to talk to you afterward about those early days in the American Council of the Blind, so be thinking about some good stories. I love listening to you talk. Let's bring this caller in. Hi there. You're with Kathy and Marlena. Who's this?
Yes. Hi, this is Anne from Chicago.
Hi, Anne. How are
Hi.
You?
Yeah. I like listening to Kathy, too.
My goodness.
Yeah. Kathy and I have had all sorts of conversations, but I'm one of those federal employees, so I thought maybe I should call in and answer your question.
Great.
There are laws, but I'm from Social Security, and I'm afraid that they're just not always followed. I agree with Mike, actually, because the way the government programs things, there's constantly programs coming out from various places all over the United States, and actually local people invent them, and then regions start using them, and the headquarters offices say they don't know about them, but I'm not sure that that's the case. So they're not compatible with JAWS and all the other programs necessarily. So we have all these local programs that are developed, and then they gradually go outward to everybody in the United States, and it's sort of working that way. So I guess what I'm saying is I know the government has rules and regulations, but I'm afraid it doesn't always work that way, and it's a real fight to to be able to keep up with your peers, it's really, really difficult. So that's very negative, and I don't mean to be, but it's
no, that's
a constant
not negative.
Fight.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
And have you any suggestion? What do you think that maybe ACB or ACBGE or combined, what do you think we could do? Have you any ideas on how we ought to attack this thing?
Well, it's probably not a good idea. Only pressure from a large organization. Probably ACB has already done that, you know, so I'm not, you know. But
that's a wonderful idea.
Only way.
A wonderful thing.
Because those of us that are in the trenches can object, but it often gets no further than our supervisor or maybe the regional person or something, but we don't have the power or the authority or the influence anywhere.
Just,
and so we got a bunch of people in the government objecting and trying to say, look, we need this. We want to be effective. We don't want anything additional. We're just trying to do our job.
Does Social Security still have the STAR program? Was that what it was called?
It was called that. It's now, it really is sort of these, it's actually centralized now. What they do is, everything comes out of Baltimore, theoretically. That's where the help desk is, where you call if you have a problem. And they are trying to be knowledgeable, but the thing is they don't have, a lot of them are contractors, like Kathy was saying. So they're trying to help us with our day-to-day programs, but they don't have access to those programs.
Well, that's crazy. How can they help you if they can't access the program?
They often can't. And that's the problem. They know the system. They know JAWS. They know, because that happens to be what we use.
Right.
But they don't have access to the Social Security programs, a lot of them. So then they try when we you know, get upset, and they do try. But then by that time, somebody has invented some other kind of program, and it's just a constant. So the local people that they used to have when STAR was active are not, that's not quite as localized as it used to be. Now, there are some offices that have, you know, enough blind people in them that they are able to have a good system. Sue Amateur, if she's listening, could probably tell you, because their office in Washington, the Social Security office, there has a number of blind people.
Yeah,
so
I actually, years ago, when I first opened my business, did some training work with some of those folks in that office, training them with JAWS and that program that you guys use that I can't remember the name of it, but boy, you're right. I mean, wow.
Well, and even they're kind of frustrated out there, but I'm a claims representative in office by myself, and I'm the only blind person there, and there's a couple more claims representatives in Chicago, but what I'm just finding is that it's a constant battle, and all I want to do is keep up and be effective. That's all I want. I don't want anything extra, but, you know, it is difficult. So
I think you're on to the right thing. I think what we need to think about is, I hope, what will come out of our meeting in Florida is that they will come out from ACBG with perhaps a resolution pointing some of this out, and it's going to take advocacy, and maybe we can even talk to them in Washington office about doing some kind of a bill. Excuse me. Boy, I made it about 35 minutes without
talking. Yeah, I didn't tell you what.
Anyway, I think that we need maybe to get some legislation going on this topic, because we all know what's happening, and we all know what's happening to us. And out here, when I first came to California, Dr. Perry taught me it's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. And we're not squeaking nearly loud enough, I think. We're going to have to do it. And I think that you got an idea what goes on here. And I think you know some people who could help you draft a resolution like we need to.
That would be great. Unfortunately, I can't get off. Time off to, I'll be at 3 days of the convention, but not in time for the government meeting, but maybe I could work with some people the 3 days that I get to be there.
Oh, yeah.
You encourage them, man. I don't get to be there at all, so you got to encourage them for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And Anne, look me up, and if, you know, if I can be of any assistance, or you know, if you need to re-listen to all of this, because I know when you're saying it, it's kind of different than when you hear it later. This will be replayed for 24 hours, and then it'll be available in the on-demand section and all that good stuff. So feel free to use ACB Radio as much of a resource as we can be for you.
Marvelous. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Call me again.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
866-666-7926 is the number. Talk to me a little bit about some of those early days of ACB and what ACB was like then.
Well, when we began, there was California Council of Blind, and like many states that belong to, well, we helped found the Federation. We were one of the 7 founding states of the Federation. Then down the road, along about in the late 50s, we found that things were not going the way many of us thought they should. We felt that we wanted to be able to express ourselves and have our ideas accepted and go along. And so we took exception to many things that happened. It seemed to us that they had become very authoritarian in the Federation, and we were told to instruct our delegates before we got to convention, which we would not do, and there came some people who wanted to take over and others that did not want them to, and you haven't known me very long, but I'm sure that by now you know I'm somebody that does not want to be told how I should think.
Yes.
And I'd like to hear some ideas, but I have a good time thinking for myself, and I'm always happy to hear everything that's said. But it made no sense to some of us to instruct a delegate how to vote before they got to the convention and hear all the arguments and all the dialogue and just be told at home how to do it. And we didn't like that. So some of us in California withdrew from California Council, including Dr. Perry, who was the founder of the California Council, and George Fogarty, Bob Campbell, and names I know are known to many people now.
Oh, yes, yes.
And so we withdrew, and we spent a year deciding not to do anything. We were so disenchanted with what was happening. And then we got into a group out here in California called the Associated Blind of California, and I had a lot of fun with that because the initials are ABC, and when I went to the legislature for us, I had a terrible time sometimes getting in to see those senators and those other lobbyists, but I would say, I'm with ABC. Oh, my goodness, I got in right now, you know. It took a while to figure it out. It was not with alcohol beverage control, but I had gotten in the office I wanted to get to, so it worked out. In any case, we then the same problem was developing in states all over the country, and California accepted some leadership in helping form the American Council of the Blind. And we found it to be a great organization. It had all the principles that we believe in. And the California Council, since we've joined together now, you know, the Associated Blind of California later became American Council of the Blind of California. And we merged in about 85 with the California Council. And we became one organization again, brought our leadership back together and have been working on things. And so those principles that, you know, that you have a freedom of expression and you can think what you like. Everybody has their own vote. Everybody can bring motions. You don't have to have somebody sitting many states away tell you this is the way it's going to be and this is what you think and this is how you should vote and give us all your money. That's never been my thing.
We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in.
Oh, great.
Thanks for waiting. Who's this? You're with Kathy and Marlena.
Well, hello, both of you. This is Billie Jean Keith, and I was listening to Ann Brash, and I think Ann is, she's a board member who was talking before, and I had my thought to add to Ann's, but I've liked what Kathy's saying so much. I don't want her to stop.
No. Let's hear what you think.
I promised to bring her back to it. So go ahead, Billie Jean. And I'm so glad you called. And thank you, by the way, for suggesting that I have Kathy on.
Well, I've talked to Kathy a lot over the last few months, and she always has things to say that are so interesting and so positive. And the things she does, you would not believe. She does meetings, I think, every weekend. She spends most of her weekend doing one chapter or doing some sort of fundraising or something for in California. Isn't that right, Kathy?
Yes. I'm president of one local chapter again. I don't know how that happened, but I am.
And you do a lot of work.
But, you know, I want to thank Billie Jean. She's my first vice president, and she's going to be taking my place at the Florida Convention of ACBGE, and I know she'll do a great job. And
well,
I appreciate her doing
that's
it.
That's very nice of you, but I really wish you would be there. But when Anne was talking, it just reminded me of a job I had where everyone just bent over backwards to accommodate me. I was able to have anything I needed, but sometimes you get someone who is an IT professional who comes in, they sell to our supervisors this software that they have adapted it. They say it will work with any of our adaptive equipment, and it doesn't work with it at all. It just will not work. And we're blamed. I don't mean me. I was not blamed. But blind people sometimes are blamed for the faults of people who are writing this software and not taking into account some of the things that have to be done in order to make it work. And it's so unfair because sometimes people are made to feel as if they're not adequate for the job, and it's not that. It's the supervisors who don't understand or middle management who doesn't understand. And the 508 needs to have a lot more teeth in it, I think. And I hope we can come up with some kind of resolution or some kind of pressure that lets people understand that we don't want to go to a job and be made to feel as if we're stupid. Because
we know we're not. And the thing that's really sad is that we know what we need, we know what it takes, and we know what it can do, and they persist in hiring people who haven't got a clue what we need to help us find it, and they don't even know what they're looking for quite often.
Or to even train us.
Yeah, right.
And then you tell them to do it, and they don't know how to do it either, because the people who've invented it don't know how to do it. We had a prime example about a year ago, a gentleman. And they just bent over backwards. This was not with the government. This was the state. But they paid $1,000 to get this guy to write set files so that WindowEyes would work with this special, wonderful software that was going to let every Center for Independent Living have the same records, and everybody instantly, they could pull them up, and the whole state would know everything we were doing. It didn't work.
You should go back, Billy, and tell them, give us $1,000. We can do much better than that with it.
True.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was hoping when we planned this program for ACBGE that we could get something really moving. We talk about it, and we have speakers come this time. I want to see us get some resolutions out there and start really pushing to get some work. We've got, those of us who work for the government, if we know anything, or the government, it's to work and try to get something done when you can't. We've got to be, I think, the spearhead of this thing in our group, Billy, and try to get people to come back in and help us with this. This is a serious business.
I know it is, because I've worked with it and just seen it happen. But I don't want to just take up time with talking about technology and stuff like that. We can work on that, but I loved hearing you talk about some of the early days, too. But I'll get off and let you guys get on it.
So glad to hear from you.
Well, lovely to talk to you. We haven't talked for a week or so.
Well, you know, my kids lucked out. I caught a cold, and for the first part of the week, I couldn't talk. And I think there's peace around here for a few days for the first time in a long time.
All right. All right. Lovely to talk to both of
you. Thank you, Billie Jean. Thank you so much for calling, and give my best to Bud.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. What did ACB look like back then? How big were we?
We weren't very. We'll come back to that after the call.
We will. We'll bring the caller in right now, and then we'll come back to that. Hi there, and this is Marlena. You're with Kathy. Who's this?
Hi, it's Sue Amateur.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
they're all calling
goodness.
In.
How are you, Kathy? Boy, it sounds like you have a bad cold.
I do.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts, and I didn't hear all of Anne's because I was trying to do some paperwork, and when you snag somebody with paperwork, you snag them, right? Anyway, first thought, I hope that you're able to have get somebody to tape the session, Kathy, that is this summer, and that maybe we could get, you know, the tapes and the comments around to folks that aren't in Jacksonville. I'm not going to be there either. I don't know if it could be, I doubt it could be streamed over the radio, right, Marlena?
No, I don't think.
Well, it technically it probably could be, but you know what would work better, because we'll be replaying the gavel to gavel stuff,
right,
on mainstream. But you know, if let's see,
I mean, if somebody coming had a pluck talk,
yeah, that's just what I was going to say. If anyone on the ACBGE board or anyone coming has a Plex talk or even a cassette machine. I mean, that's not my most favorite way, but we can convert a cassette into airworthy digital media. ACB Radio would be very happy to run that, those two speakers.
Not only that, I just think having it available, we could send it to people, you know, if some of your membership wasn't there, because I think this is going to be very informative.
One of the problems we're going to have is that when all the literature came out on what we could and couldn't do and what we could have and not have at our meetings, it's very clear that you've got to use the hotel equipment at quite a healthy price.
Uh-oh.
And you're not able to use your own equipment.
Yep.
And so unless somebody had the good sense to have a quiet cassette sitting down on their lap somewhere, they might pose a problem.
But you will have a PA system.
But I know it was outrageous. I felt it was outrageous.
Right. I agree with
prices.
But you will have a PA
charged
system in the room?
We will have one microphone.
Okay. It could probably be stealthily arranged.
Well,
he says in the radio in front of me. Anyway,
hey.
my second thought, because I totally agree with what you guys are saying, I was lucky in that I was about 6 weeks away from retirement when my employer, the county, decided they were going to go to this new statistical system. And so I thought, oh, thank goodness I'm leaving. But also they found out it would cost like $1,500 to train me in how to use it. And so since I was getting ready to leave, I got someone who was cited to fill in all the fields. And everybody in the office hated it. So not only are they horrible for us, but half the time they're not even good for the sighted people that have to use these systems that are dreamed up by, you know, technocrats. But I'm wondering if we couldn't somehow, Kathy, sit down with some people from the GE board and the advocacy committee and try to strategize something that we might do in addition to resolutions, either before convention, if we could get everybody together, or after convention and, you know, use the resources on the advocacy committee like Otis Stevens and Charlie Hodge and some others that have a lot of expertise. Melanie?
Yeah, I think we need to do it after, because I want to see what comes from the speakers and what they give us and what their recommendations are. We'll be asking questions about what they suggest we can do, and you know, they have, both of them have expertise in this kind of stuff.
Right.
We can begin with them, and then we sure need to do something. We've had some excellent speakers in ACBGE, and we have them in the American Council, but we need to get on this subject and really get after it, because the time has passed when we can just talk about it. We've got to do something about it.
Well, especially as blind people are losing their jobs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, talk's cheap when they're losing their positions and so on. Anyway, you have a lot more to talk about, so I'll buzz off, but I just wanted to call in and throw those thoughts.
Thanks, Sue.
Take care, Kathy.
You
Thanks,
take
Marlena.
Care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What did ACB look like back then?
Well, I wanted to have an ACB convention in 68 in California. I was a brand new president, and I was chair of the committee that year. And so they said, oh, no one will come to California. Well, everybody came to California, and they didn't just come for the 4 days. We used to have it from Wednesday through Saturday. They came Sunday, and they stayed till Sunday, and there were 400 people, and we used up a couple of hotels, and things happened like I told everybody, bring sweaters because it gets very cold in San Francisco. The wind comes off the bay and you'll freeze. Well, guess what? We had a heat wave that lasted a week. And all that saved me was God blessed me and sent in some fog Saturday night. We almost froze to death. They were all out here with, you know, San Francisco clothes that they didn't need till the last day. And we didn't have air conditioning then because, you know, it doesn't get that hot usually in San Francisco. Well, it was just blistering hot every day. In one hotel, Ruth Robron was president. In one hotel, the elevator, every time we got on it, it would get stuck. And so he said to me, finally, you're convention chair and I'm the president. We're going to have to go separately because one of us has to be down there. Well, we were on this elevator and it stopped. And this lady was that was on there was going to have, what is it, claustrophobia?
Yeah,
hysterical. And so this gentleman said, is your friend going to become hysterical? And Reese said, she wouldn't dare.
I could just hear Reese in that deliberate, slow tone of his.
Yes, the judge delivered a decision.
Dare.
She wouldn't dare. But it was fun. We went, we took them to Chinatown, and we took them all kinds of places and visited. We took them up on top of Telegraph Hill, and a bus broke down. And this mechanic came. We sat up there for 2 hours, and everybody sang. We had a good time. It didn't bother us. But then on Sunday, they were going to go on a bay cruise. You know, that's a big thing out here. You go on a bay cruise and see Alcatraz and go around the forts and all that business. And so Reese said, I think you've worked so hard, you really shouldn't go on this cruise. And I said, oh, I don't think it's appropriate for the chair to stay home from it. He said, well, Kathy, he said, you went on the bus broke down, it was under your seat. You went on the elevator, it stopped constantly. You went in a room to fix something and the heat came on, it wouldn't go off, and it was hot, stifling in there. He said, I really don't want the American Council for the Blind to have, publicity that we had all these people out on this boat and it sank. So I did stay home for that one.
And 400 people at a convention back then, that was a big
convention.
That was convention.
A lot.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
My first convention, although I've been in ACB since, I don't know, 71 or 72, somewhere in those, around there. But my first convention was in Grand Rapids, and I think in 79, I think that was, or 8. And I was actually working with Reese. We were doing some 504 training stuff. And, golly, there were 600 people there. We thought, wow, you know, this is really phenomenal. But
you know, one thing that you might get a kick out of, George Bogrie and I in 1969 went to Charlotte, North Carolina for a convention. We were the only two Californians that went. And if you noticed, and you've been to these conventions, we've had 40, 45, 50 some people at conventions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't help but think every time I go to one, gee, George and I were the only two that went out in 69. We were coming back the same night that the people landed on the moon. And I told George in the plane on the way back, this is as far up as I ever want to get. You couldn't hire me to go up there. But I think that is, you know, that's, we were so small. But I marvel at all that we accomplished. We may have been small, but we did a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. And people like me and people like Kelly and everyone in between that age range has benefited so tremendously from the Kathy Skivers and the Durward McDaniels and, you know, the MJ Schmitz and I mean, you know, you start naming names of people and it is a legacy that you have handed down to us. And I just so appreciate coming to know you just the little bit that I have. Every time we talk, you leave me feeling really good about being in the ACB and being a part of it. Let's bring this caller in before I get all choked up. I'm not going to do that. Hi there. You're with Kathy and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, my name is Anya, and I'm calling from Maine for the first time.
Welcome, Anya. What part of Maine?
In central Maine, about 20 minutes south of Bangor.
I used to spend my summers in Old Orchard.
Oh, that's southern Maine.
Yeah.
About almost three hours north of that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, welcome.
Well, I listened to Kathy and Ann and some of the callers, and I can only wholeheartedly agree. I may have an idea, too. I think some of us blind and visually impaired people need to start being more assertive when something new comes in. We need to be the ones to test new equipment. And not only that, you know how the word is spreading lately that the Internet is supposed to be controlled by the big companies? I think the Americans with Disabilities Act needs to be enforced a lot more strongly. I currently work for a large bank, and when something is was being purchased or they talked about purchasing, I would say, okay, how does this accommodate the blind person on the job? And I stress the ADA all the time.
Good for you. That's what we have to do. Advocacy is one of the most important things that ACB and all organizations of the blind have ever done. It has to begin with people just like you and just like me, and there has to be a commitment. I am concerned now that people who come in now, I know that a lot of you will come in and work on these things, and I think it's wonderful that you do what you do with the bank. That's the way it has to begin with each of us.
Well,
we have to draw a line in the sand.
There is another thought that comes to my mind. I'm not originally from the United States. I'm from Germany. And in Germany, it's common practice that when any person with any type of disability is hired, the employee gets tax incentives. Why can't the United States do that? Make it a treat to hire a person with a disability and really work on getting the equipment. The government supports all sorts of things. Why not do that all the way around and really ask the people on an individual basis, what is it that will work for you and how can we work with you, and hire people for those particular fields? We've got enough qualified people.
Some years ago, there was a tax incentive for disadvantaged groups, and we got some help. It was only for 2 years, though, and I thought it should have continued, of course. And out here, we have tried in California to get tax incentives, but now, of course, they don't want you to do anything that's going to help people that don't have anything. I'm sorry, but that may sound a little political, and I guess it is, but
it's pretty frustrating.
We see so much going to people that, not that we don't want them to have it, but it does seem that to share it with people who really could do something with what they get would be a wonderful thing, and I wish we could get some incentives for people to hire us, or mass education. Maybe they ought to have a course in all schools now. You know, you get history, math, and mathematics, and geography. Maybe they ought to teach people a course on people with disabilities, somebody that works just a little differently than you do.
They do that in some universities now, but it's not even far enough. By the way, I will be attending the Jacksonville Convention.
Good for you. Great.
Representing the Pine Tree Guide Dog Users of Maine. So.
Oh, great. Well, please look me up, Anya. I'd love to meet you.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not going to be there, or I would, too, and I love your name, by the way.
Me, too.
Thank you.
Me, too. It's very exotic sounding.
Well,
thank you so much for calling, and I hope you'll do it again.
I hope you'll keep on with your good ideas, and please share them with us.
Well, I'll do what I can, you know. For now, I'm just going to continue keeping on, you know, keep on trucking.
Oh, that's
right?
Great.
Yep. Thank you, Anya.
Bye-bye.
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 Well, Kathy, we've come to the end of the hour just about, and
we've talked to such nice people.
We have. Will you come back on my show again?
Well, if you think that you can stand it again. I've enjoyed it very much, and I really appreciate your having me, Marlene, and the job that you're doing.
Well, I started to say this before, and I just really want you to know how sincere I am about the legacy that you and others leave for us. And I am just delighted with the energy that this show seems to have stirred tonight among the callers, and I think that I won't be surprised to see a good resolution come out in Jacksonville.
And I hope so.
Well, thank
you. And thank you for all your work and for having me.
Well, thank you so much, and I will talk to you soon.
You sure will. Thanks again.
Have a great
night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Kathy.
And to Gary, too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. That's Kathy Skivers, and this is a song that I think fits this hour. That's Peter, Paul, and Mary, and the times, they are a change. And what a great hour that was with Kathy Skivers. If you're just joining us and you missed it, hang in for the replay, because, boy, I tell you, the energy that I felt from Kathy and all of the callers in that last hour was just darn phenomenal. We're in open forum now. My dog is wagging her tail. She's knocking the house down. I'm not sure if you can hear it or not, but I'm not sure what she's so excited about, but I don't know. 866-666-7926. Little guide dog Madeline is making her presence known. And little guide dog Madeline is turning, well, she has turned 10 years old. And so we are in that time now where we start thinking about, oh, is it fair to keep asking her to guide into her 11th year? You know, her guiding is a little bit yes and a little bit no, and kind of depends on the day. And, oh, anyone who's retired a guide knows what a tough decision that can be. So kind of thinking about that. Web Braille's back. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Thanks to everyone who signed the Restore Web Braille petition. I'm sure that that was of some significance. I certainly believe that. There's some controversy about what one must now do to download Web Braille books, and would love to hear your take on that. One must accept their copyright statement each time one downloads volume. And so if you're going to download a book with five volumes, then you press the accept button five times. And some people are quite upset about that and feel that they don't mind doing it once when you come onto the site, when you log on, but why should you have to do it each and every time? I suspect, and I don't know this for a fact, it's just a supposition on my part, but I suspect that part of that is due to digital signaturing. Is signaturing a word? Anyway, my guess is that the Web Braille server doesn't know, for example, that BR1234V1.BRF and BR1234V2.BRF are the same book. Now, I could be totally off the mark, but that's kind of what I suspect. And, you know, it's a different strategy, but certainly those of us who use other resources for getting books, such as Audible or netlibrary.com, we are accustomed to having to do goofy things in order to get your book. With Audible, for example, you can only have up to four devices authorized, and those devices must be Audible compliant. And you technically can, but legally must not, change Audible files into MP3 files. Now, with NetLibrary, you download your book, and you can only play that book on an approved device like a little Movo or something like that, or the particular computer on which you downloaded that book. If you try to play that book, say you have a laptop and a desktop, if you try to play your NetLibrary book on a machine other than that which you used for downloading, the book won't play. In addition to that, you do not have access to a NetLibrary book for longer than somewhere around 21 days. If it takes you longer than 21 days to read that book, your license has expired and you have to download it again. So all kinds of schemes out there for digital copyright protection. Let's see who's on the line. Hi there, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Yitzchak Van Zier, and I'm in Ogden, Utah.
And I'm sorry, what is your name?
Richard Van Zier is my name. I'm talking to Marlena, right?
Yes, you are, Richard. Welcome to the program.
Well, this is my first time calling in.
Well, I'm delighted to have you.
Well, I'm delighted to call in. In fact, this is about my... Let's see, I kind of missed the... one where they had Ronnie Millsap on, where you had Ronnie Millsap on the show, because I got doing other stuff and forgot all about it, even though I had it in an email. And I had just gotten my new Braille Note M-Power. Now, I don't know if you use the Braille Note or what device did you use there.
I do use the Braille Note M-Power. Yes, I do.
So you're empowered like me, huh?
I am indeed.
But I have the problem of the multiple file download. when with some of them, I don't know if you're on the burnout list.
No, I'm not.
But what some of the empowers have a problem when they have Kisoft 7, that when you download one file, it downloads the whole file.
Uh-huh.
But when you try to download subsequent files, it downloads in part way, and then it says either failed to download, or it says unknown URL, or both of them.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's a problem with the program. They're working on it. They're hoping to have an upgrade soon that's going to have all the fixes to, like they have some people that have problems with emails and some that have problems with this download thing. Not all of them have it. But anyway, so what happened was I downloaded something, and then I tried to get on to ACBA Radio Mainstream, and it just wouldn't download it.
Well, the show with Ronnie Millsap is in the on-demand section. So if you go to acbradio.org, and then you go to the on-demand section, and then you go to current programming, and then you go to Marlena, once you do that, you will find a link that says May 1st, Ronnie Millsap joins Marlena, and if you click on that link, you should be able to listen to the program.
Cool.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you about the web braille.
Okay.
A while ago.
Okay.
One of the problems that seems to be happening now, I can download web braille files onto my Empower because it uses a different way to download it. I don't know if you know, if you're on Bookshare, but they have a different way of downloading. On Bookshare, it downloads it as a zip file.
Right.
And on the web braille, you save it. You know, it's a save as.
Right, right.
Yeah. So my problem is that when I try to go to download, and I tried it on a search because I haven't tried it yet on the Braille Book Review. But I tried it on a research result where I wanted to see just what it would do. Well, when you download your first volume, then you have to go back to go to your second volume.
Right.
So
right.
Now with that agreement thing in the way, it goes, when you go back to that agreement, but then when you want to go back to your volume list, instead of going to the next volume like it used to, it goes all the way back up to the top. So you have 100 entries on your search, and your book is the 99th entry.
Yeah.
So you got to run all the way back down. Then you got to run all the way to whatever volume you want.
Well, you know, in the short term, can you try, and maybe you've tried this, but how about doing a find and search for the name of the book, and at least you'll get right to the name of the book.
Yeah, the only thing is, you know, and this is what I hate, is that they have, the way it is, too, is I wish they would have the name of the book as the file name.
Yeah, instead of the number.
MRS Rock 64BR1994V1,
you know. Right, yeah.
You know, because then you have to go in, you have to change the name, you have to go in there and you know, I think if they want to have that agreement thing, now Bookshare has an agreement, but the only place you see that is when you download the book. It's in the beginning of the book.
Well, one of the differences is the Bookshare books, if you don't have Bookshare's software to unpack it, you can't read it. Whereas the NLS books, the BRF books, are readable through other devices. You know, and I mean, I'm just guessing. I don't have any insider information on any of this, but I'm just guessing that that's why they're having us do this now, that they're covering the place where they happily sit, as I like to say.
Actually, the Bookshare book, they're actually zipped, I think they're WinZip files or something like that, and then BRS files.
Right, but you have to run the Bookshare unpacking tool, right?
If you have the unpacking tool that you run from the, if you do it on the computer, now of course the Burn Note comes with it already installed.
Right.
The library, even so, I don't think unless you still have to have special software to read them.
Yes and no. I mean, you can put a BRF book right onto a book port, and the DoubleTalk speech synthesizer will read it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You can put it in a voice note, and it'll read it to you.
What?
You can open them in Kurzweil and OpenBook, and it'll read it to you. So, yes and no.
I don't know. I think there ought to be an easier way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it seems that all of a sudden this comes up out of nowhere. You know, all of a sudden, web browser goes down, and it's like, oh, gee, you know, we got some security problems, and it just goes down. And then it comes up again with all this extra stuff, and it seems to be that it just makes it harder. And I really think if it was a choice between ease of access to material and having tighter copyright laws, I'd rather have ease of access to material. You know, it's just, there's only so much you can do to make everything, if you want to make it totally secure, you might as well not send it out, you know, or
yeah,
you might as well,
yeah.
There's only so much you can do on it.
Well, hopefully when Mr. Silkey is at the ACB convention in Jacksonville, Florida, people will feel free to voice these concerns to him directly.
I wish I could attend. Right now, we don't have a way to get, to attend it. But.
Well, make sure you listen on the internet, because on ACB Radio, we will try very hard to have MSN and email running at the same time, and try to bring comments and questions from the listeners who can't be in attendance. So make sure you check it out.
Where do I need to be? Is it first I can actually listen to the convention?
Right where you are now, right here on Mainstream.
Okay, and it's going to be on what day?
Well, the convention goes from July 8th to the 15th.
Uh-huh.
And the business, the convention itself will be running in the morning, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then on Thursday as well, and then Friday it'll be all day, probably on Friday. So, yep, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream.
Okay, well, it's been wonderful talking to you.
Well, you too, and I hope you'll call me up again.
Oh, I'm on a cell phone, so I have to watch airtime.
Yeah. All right. Well, you have a wonderful night, Richard, in Utah.
What's that? You have a great night yourself.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Yeah, web braille there's certainly been a lot of discussion on the lists this week, and I don't know, I'm not sure why it is the way it is, and I'm just speculating, so. Hi there, you're with Marlena, who's this?
Hi Marlena, this is Marcia from Michigan.
Hey, we had Mike from Michigan earlier.
Oh, I know, I don't know who he is.
Well.
Never heard of him, but.
There you go.
But, I think you remember me.
Of course, how could I forget you?
Anyway, I have a question, well, a comment, well, question, comment, whatever. I'm just wondering why Braille displays cost so doggone much money.
Yeah, they do cost a lot of money.
And I sure as heck can't afford to buy one.
Yeah, well, but you know that web Braille is accessible without a Braille display, right?
No, didn't know that.
Yeah. Do you have any kind of a note taker?
Nope.
Okay.
They're too expensive too, for God's sake.
Do you have any scanning software?
I don't have OpenBook. I have,
Kurzweil?
Nope. I have,
OmniPage?
Nope. It's, my husband, well, I know what it is. It's, Text Cloner.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
that probably wouldn't work, right?
No. You can read web Braille. You can read BRF files, not just web Braille.
Uh-huh.
You can read BRF files using Kurzweil, using OpenBook, using a book port, and certainly using a voice note. A Braille and Speak, a PacMate Braille Note.
I just have my basic desktop PC.
Yeah, and see
with Text Cloner.
And see what I don't know anything about Text Cloner, but I am pretty sure.
And you know, it's your basic. You know, it doesn't have a speech engine.
Yeah,
and so
it probably doesn't have a back translator for Braille files.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, see a BRF file, okay?
BRF?
BRF, as in, right, like Braille file, BRF.
Uh-huh.
That's the format in which the Braille is created. And
uh-huh.
it's called a BRF file.
Uh-huh.
Now, If you were to open a BRF file, if you were to tell your computer, I want you to open this file, it would come up on the screen as a bunch of garbage. It would be left brace, right brace, question mark, dollar sign. Because there is nothing in the middle that back translates the BRF into what's called ASCII text.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's the piece that you're missing. But any device that has back translation capability makes a BRF file accessible. So a lot of people who do have these devices but don't have a Braille display think that they can't read web Braille files when in fact they can through those devices.
So they are translatable into text.
And that I'm guessing is one of the problems that people really need to agree each time before they download, because this can be done. You're signing a document that says you won't misuse this.
Right.
Now, whether that's the right procedure or not, I'm not making a judgment about that.
I kind
of think it's a pain in the neck, but
it is. Yeah,
but I kind of understand where it's coming from.
Well, they're it's called CYA.
Right. Cover the place where you happily sit. Yes.
Yeah.
So you know, it's it's great that web Braille's back, but I think that we as blind people are being now perhaps equally inconvenienced with this digital stuff. I mean, I buy songs, okay, from Napster, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I spend like 99 cents a song, and it comes down in this Windows Media file. If I want to play that song, even though it's stored on the computer, on my music computer, I can't play that song calling it up from another computer. I can only play it on that one computer.
Don't you miss the days of 45?
Oh, golly, and I bought and paid for the darn thing.
Yeah, but remember back in the days of 45, you got two.
I know.
For a buck. I remember back in the day buying 45s for, what, 60
96.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You got two tunes.
I remember when my grandmother gave me a Kennedy, what was it, a Kennedy half dollar? Yeah, a Kennedy half dollar, and I went up and bought a Beatles 45 with it.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh? Now those days are gone, honey.
Oh, you betcha.
So anything else going on in Michigan?
Well, you know, the weather has been really weird the last couple weeks. It's been rainy and cold, and today it's been windy and partly cloudy, and the sun's been in and out, and it's just, but I guess by Wednesday or so, it could be up in the 70s.
Whoa.
How are things there in... Where are you?
Seattle.
Seattle.
Yeah, we were pretty hot last week, and now we've cooled off a little bit, but I got my summer clothes out today. So.
Oh, good for
yeah.
you. Well, I haven't, Rob, my husband, did wear shorts last week, but then he said, I'm done with shorts, so he's back in Los Angeles. And I said, I'm not going to do it. It's not warm enough yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But, well, that's what I said. I think we're in Seattle because it was raining every day.
Yeah. Well, that's a myth that we tell you people on the East Coast to keep you all
out
of here.
We're in the Midwest. We're in Michigan.
Yeah, well, to us, you're the East Coast.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. Well, anyway, I'm just hoping that one of these days, I'd love to get a Braille display, but they're just too freaking expensive.
Yeah. There's technology that I've sort of read bits and pieces about that if it ever comes to fruition will bring the price down significantly, but.
Well, that would be good. Well, especially for these kids, you know. The school children who have very few support systems throughout the country.
Sure.
They need to learn Braille, and they need assistive technology where they can read it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks
for... Well, you take care, Marlena.
I will. You too, and I hope your weather warms up there real
soon.
Oh,
yeah. Well, hopefully it will this week.
All right.
Well, you take care.
All right. Call me again.
Sure will.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I always love to hear from Marsha from Michigan. There's just some alliteration there. Marsha from Michigan. 866-666-7926. And we've got another call. Hi there, you with Marlena. Who's this?
Well, hello, Marlena.
Well, hello there. Who's this?
This is Margaret Johnson.
Margaret Johnson. I thought that was you, but you had a frog in your throat.
I always do. Well, I spent a long time trying to... call in. And
well,
so.
See, but that makes me feel good because then I freak out every week before the show and I think, oh, what if nobody calls? So it's music to my ears.
Well, I wanted to, if it's okay, I wanted to get back on this deal about, you know, blind people and jobs and stuff.
Absolutely.
I think we're missing a whole deal with the Lions Club. I mean, the Lions Club people that have been in for years are getting older and people are not joining, and one reason they're not joining is because used to, you had this whole civic-minded thing where a lot of employers would pay for their top employees to belong to Lions Club, Rotary Club, different things like that. And when they did that, and I really think that's how some of these government jobs came into being, and I used to work for the government myself in the IRS, is you had employees of the blind agencies there, you know, talking to other, you know, people who could hire people and saying, well, couldn't a blind person do that job? And, you know, things were, you know, thought up and they had a personal relationship with people, you know, in the club. And I think we're missing all that now. And the employees don't pay for many of the people to come to the Lions Club. And I know in my local Lions Club, we have about three or four bank employees that are, you know, their way is paid into the Lions Club. And usually where this has happened in the past, when they retire, they'll usually stay in. But we're not getting enough new people in. And I think it's really, this is my personal opinion, I think that people who are in work for the blind really have almost an obligation to belong to the Lions Club, because there's where your contacts are. There's where you see people in the community. You find out what's going on, what kind of jobs are out there. You hear people come into the club and tell things that are going on and how it works, and you can be sitting there thinking, well, you know, a blind person could do that. And I'm on bandwagon for people and work for the blind to join the Lions Club, and for at least, you know, the directors of the agency and the, and if they have placement specialists, that the, maybe the agency ought to pay their way into the Lions Club and let these people get in there and get the contacts with the people, because you see a lot of things go through the Lions Club.
What about blind people joining the Lions Club?
Oh, I think it's a great thing. And in my Lions Club, every time anybody comes and they brag about their new Cinema 8 theater, I say, do you have anything set up for accessible, you know, descriptive
movies? DBS, yeah. Yeah.
And this guy told me, that's not available. I said, yes, it is available.
So,
and then every time they come and talk about highway whatever, and our town has two highways that crosses right in the middle of the town, cuts the whole town into four. So I say, and they tell how hard it is to cross certain intersections. I said, well, how would you like to be blind and cross some of these things? What about accessible pedestrian signals? Every time anybody comes to the Lions Club that I belong to, if it's anything I can bring up, I just bring it before them every time. And the people that ask me to join the club, that's why I'm in there, is they say, we know how to buy, you know, we know how to buy glasses and we know how to pay for surgery, but we don't know where the blind people are and we don't know what they need or what they're doing.
And I am getting the sense more and more from talking to you and other people who are involved with Lions Clubs that more and more Lions Clubs want blind people to join. Would you
they
say
do.
That? Yeah.
Because really, well, they want everybody to join. And it's down to the point that, you know, we just need people to join the Lions Club and see what's going on. I know a whole lot more of what's going on in my town since I joined the Lions Club. And I know who is what and,
yeah.
and a whole lot of things, you know,
yeah.
that
yeah.
I didn't know. And but I think, you know, it benefits everybody. And, of course, you know, what I try to bring to my club is here's what blind people can do. Here's what they, you know, have done. And, you know, here are the agencies out here. And, you know, and I just try to make it, you know, make them understand that, you know, there are things going on that a lot of us never even seen.
So it's advocacy again, but at a different level.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so if you, you know, if you do that, and, you know, when I first came to my Lions Club, well, you know, they wanted to know if I was going to have my meat cut up, and they wanted to know, you know, if I said, what I really need is a ride to the meeting.
Yeah.
I said, that's what I really need. And so my Lions Club's been very good to me, and they've listened to me, and you know, they don't always, you know, they can't always just every time I think, you know, something needs to be done. But still, it takes time, and it takes, you know, it just takes time to be known and for you to learn how things work in the Lions Club and everything. But I think that anyone who calls themselves, you know, a worker and work for the blind and a career in it, they need to, because the Lions Club is the only civic club that really has dedicated themselves to helping blind people. And why not, you know?
Yeah.
And we used to have more of it and everything, and so I just think that it's just a real problem. I mean, I was told to go and apply for a job, and I said, well, what do I tell them, you know, I said, what do I tell them about their, you know, whether jobs can be put on this program? Well, you go and apply for the job, and if they want to hire you, then we'll come out there and try to put it on. I said, well, I can do that, but then if it doesn't work, does that make me look bad or you look bad or both of us look bad? You know, we need to have people in work for the blind going around to these industries and doing, well, we used to call them desk audits, but, what, you know, just check to see what is, what does a job entail, and is it something a blind person can do?
Sure, like job development specialists.
Yeah. But we don't have that as much as we used to. And I know they say we don't have money and all this stuff, but, you know, my pet peeve about rehab is, if it's the blind person's job to, you know, responsibility to go get a job, and if we're supposed to do all that, then we could just go to ESD, and, you know, they could just hire clerks in rehab for the blind, and they could just shuffle paperwork. So if it takes extra expertise to do this, you know, in rehab, and if they say, well, you need to go to your office for the blind, and those people in office for the blind need to be out there, you know, paving the way for us, because I thought that's what rehab was.
Anyway,
I could preach a big sermon on that, but I just had to call in. I didn't have a chance last hour.
Oh.
I was listening to Kathy, but
yeah, wasn't she great?
Yeah, she was. She said she wasn't going to be at the convention this year.
Yeah, she's not going to be there this year.
I'm sorry.
And you know, she told me this today, and she said that now her age is a matter of public knowledge, because apparently there was a resolution passed in California that had her age attached to it. But so I'm going to let you know. Do you know that she's 81 years old and still working as hard as she's working?
Well, you know, I'm not surprised by the things that she tells.
Yeah.
She sounds more like about 70.
I know. I mean, she went to her first blindness convention the year I was born.
Well, I read the, I read the ACB, you know, history book.
The People of Vision?
What did you say?
People of Vision.
People of Vision. And, I mean, you know, I just tell everybody, look, if you'll read that book, you'll understand everything. You know, it's all there. In fact, I would think that would be a good book for anybody doing a research paper, getting their, you know, vision hours and stuff, because everything is documented. Everything is just, it's just a great book, you know.
Yep.
And I just wish that we had more people that, I have a problem with here in Arkansas. We have people that don't belong to NFB or ACB, but they want all the benefits, you know.
Yeah.
And they have had everybody advocate for them so long, you know, their parents and everybody. And now they think they have just arrived at everything. But really, any and all of this stuff can be snatched away at any time.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to look forward to seeing you in Jacksonville.
Oh, I hope I do see you and Gary, the board guy.
That's right. He'll be there.
I'm waiting on that registration form to come on the internet. I guess you haven't seen it yet.
No, I haven't looked in the last couple of days, but, you know, keep checking up there.
Well, I'm disappointed because I'm not going to get to go to the Florida School for the Blind because I think the Blind Lions having a meeting there.
And you better be there after the spiel you just gave. So you better be at that Blind Lions meeting.
I better be there.
That's
I'll
right.
I'll be ousted from the whole thing.
That's right. I'll put it all over my program.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, you take care.
Good to talk to you.
You too, Margaret. Bye-bye. Another delightful person, Margaret Johnson in Arkansas. I love her accent. Hi there, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. This is Lisa Hall calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, Lisa. Congratulations on your new job.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm still working on getting the bed set up, looking for apartments and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Trying to do all this the research on the internet. So, I am a user for both Web Braille and for Bookshare.
Right.
I do use both services, and since we got Web Braille back, I was able to work with it. And there's always going to be extra step for each volume that you download.
Yeah.
And if you download any book outside of the NLS program, like from the one from Iowa or from Massachusetts, you have to take the text that shows on the screen in grade 2, copy it to the clipboard and put it in the notepad and save it as a text file.
Oh, so you can't download that book?
No. Unfortunately, they didn't have that dialogue that normally comes up.
Uh-huh.
For those.
I wonder if you can right-click it, though, and do a save target
well,
as.
Well, the thing about it is, if you do a right mouse click on the volume number,
uh-huh.
You're still going to have to go through that security.
Well, yeah.
Which, you know, you can't directly download it without having
right.
to go through that security
right.
step. So when you got to either accept it or decline it.
Right.
You got to press the space bar on those buttons. You
right.
can't just do a right mouse click.
No, right. I know that,
it's not like a hyperlink.
Right. But I was wondering about the books outside of the NLS collection. You're saying
no,
that you can't.
No, that doesn't work that way.
So you can't right click those.
No.
And do a save still target
go through the security thing, just like we always have for all the
others. But once you do that, though, can you then download that book like you normally could?
Once you press the accept button, what's going to happen, you're going to have a dialog that comes up on the screen that will allow you to either open or save.
Right. So you...
That's for the NLS collection.
Right, but I'm asking about the books outside the NLS collection.
The books outside the NLS collection is going to show up on the web page.
I see.
So it'll read gibberish with speech, unless you got a braille display where it would open right into the browser.
Right, right.
So you don't have that dialog that comes up on the screen that allows you to save or open.
Even if you right-click it, you don't?
No.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So I just want to kind of clear up a couple of things for some people.
Well, you
did experiment with some of that.
You would still be able, though, if you pasted that into, say, Notepad,
yeah.
You would still be able to save that
as a text file.
Well, I'm thinking even as a BRF file and
right.
put it on a book port
yeah.
or into a Braille Note or a
yeah.
PacMate.
You can still do that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you can still do that. You just got that extra step. Let's say a book that's at 10 volumes, it's going to take you a lot longer to do
right.
it this way.
Well,
they do it for security purposes.
You know, I mean, and I got to go back to the fact that sighted people are, you know, I buy a song from Napster like anybody else does,
yeah.
and I'm bloody well inconvenienced by the fact that I can't play it except on the computer that I
right.
bought it for. And,
right.
you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, that's the way it is. And
yeah, it's something that we just have to learn how to deal with, you know, because of the security scheme.
Yeah, and I don't have a better idea for something else. Maybe someone else does. Maybe they'll call and tell us.
Yeah. Well, you know, I never, as long as I download books, they go in my personal library. I don't share it with anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it should be. It should not be passed on to other people at all.
No.
None whatsoever.
No.
Even if you take a BRF file and translate it to text, you're not going to have perfect text spelled out because you're going to have translation reverse errors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if you got a book that's in a textbook format rather than a literary format.
Yeah, or if you got a book that has a lot of accented words.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah,
I know.
Correct. I'm reading the Louis Braille Touch of Genius book.
Yes, I bought that book.
And I'm reading it some in Braille and some through Kurzweil.
Yeah.
Because of my hands not
uh-huh.
being able to do a lot of Braille for
right.
a long time.
Right.
And every time it reads a name with an accent, it puts the at into
right.
the word. So,
right.
you know, it's far from a smooth solution,
yeah.
but, that's the way it is.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say I'm really thankful for what's going to be happening over the next few weeks.
Well, I'm excited, and you'll have to call us back when you're moving to Cincinnati.
Yes, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Well, you'll have to call us back when you get there and
sure.
tell us all about it. And
sure.
you know, everybody's been following your career, so now
yeah.
you've gotten the job, and that's great.
Yeah. Certainly. Looking forward to networking with other people up there that are in the same field I'm in.
Yep, that'll be great.
All right.
All right, well, keep in touch.
Thank you.
All right, Lisa, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Lisa Hall in Texas, 866-666. 7926. It's about 45 minutes past. We got another call. Let's bring him on in. Hi, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
That's Bill Hogue, Marlena.
Hey, Bill Hogue in Eastern Washington. How the heck are you?
Well, I'm doing great. We had one heck of a storm over here the other day, though.
Oh,
tried to blow us into Idaho. But anyway, what I called about, the lady that was from Arkansas.
Marcia, yes.
Marcia. I sure wish she'd send you an email and then you could forward it to me.
I'm sorry, not Marcia. Margaret.
Margaret.
I think I've got Margaret's email address, so what I'll do, if I do have it, I'll send her an email and I'll give her your email address.
That'll work.
Yeah.
That'll work.
Margaret, if you don't hear from me in a day or so, send me an email. Because it means I accidentally may have deleted you. But yeah, I think I've got it.
But I, about 5 years ago, joined our local Lions Club.
Yeah, and how do you find it? Do you like it?
I think it's probably one of the greatest organizations, you know, around.
Tell me why.
Well, as a blind person, like Margaret was saying, hey, the Lions do a lot for the blind and for visually impaired and hearing and whatnot. You know, I wasn't sure exactly what I was getting into when I got into it, but, you know, I never miss a meeting. And good or bad, I mean, they elected me president to take over the 1st of July.
Wow.
Which I'm tickled pink about.
That's great.
You know, I mean, we have probably 40 members, and I'm the only blind person in our club. But, you know, our members have enough confidence in me to feel that, that I can do the job, and, I believe I can. Or I wouldn't have accepted when they asked me, you know, if I would run for president. So,
do you find that they consult with you about blindness-related things?
They do. They really do. And one of the funny things, having most of them had never been around a blind person to speak of. Larry, the director of the Edith Mitchell Center, is a member of the Lions Club, and he actually brought me into the Lions, but he's the only one that's actually been around any blind people. And we have a large concession trailer that the Lions Club built. And this is how we generate our revenue to support our programs, which last year, we generated about $21,000 with our concession trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, when I first joined, they were signing up. We do the boat races every year. We take our trailer down there for 3 days. That's our largest thing that we participate as far as our concession trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the guy that runs the trailer, he says, Bill, I don't know what the heck there is down there that you can do. And I says, well, I'll come down and I'll find something to do. Well, okay. So anyway, I went down there, and we have the fryers, the deep fryers for French fries and chicken strip and that. We have them, actually, they're outside. And so I stood out there and was talking to Ed, the guy that runs Fryers, for a while, and I went inside. I was standing by the door, and somebody said, Bill, ask Ed to cook, you know, some chicken strips. So I hollered out the door and asked him, and anyway, I mean, then they got really busy. And they kept telling me to tell Ed what to cook, and I did. He'd bring it in, hand it to me, and I'd pass it on to where it needed to go. And about 2 hours later, things slowed down. Ed come in and stepped up in the trailer, and he says, don't ever let this guy leave.
Yeah, you're the traffic cop.
He said, you know, he says, we've always tried to find somebody to stand here and tell me what I'm supposed to be cooking. But he says, we've always put a sighted person there, and the first thing is somebody sends him off to go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I know you're not going to send Bill off to go do something else. And, you know, but he says, he knows what he's asked me to cook. And, you know, it's one of the things that really makes me feel useful.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoy it. I mean, we have just a ball down there when, you know, when we're doing this. And it's a lot of work, but hey, it's still, and then they let me wash dishes when it's all over.
I'll let you wash dishes at my house.
Hey, you were talking about, Madeline.
Yeah.
How many dogs have you had?
She's number 7. I've been using guide dogs since 1964.
You started when you was really young.
I did. I was 14.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yep.
Well, someday I'm going to have to, I know you've been all over the United States in, you know, one form or another.
Yeah, in one form or another.
Well, I mean, you know, meaning living there or
yeah,
visiting.
Yeah.
But, hey, I'll let you go to work and...
All right, my dear. Well, thanks so much for calling.
And I will talk to you sometime in, well, before or right after convention.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Hey, catch you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. We've got a few more minutes left before we have to wrap it up. Time certainly enough for another call if you're so inclined to call in. And you are. You did. Hi there. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. It's me, Kelly, again.
Hi, Kelly.
I was going to ask you about the Braille, web Braille.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Is that like, can you get on... the Braille light for on the internet, is that right? I know it has to do with the web and Braille.
Well, yeah, what you do is you get a username and password from your Braille library, from your
yes.
Talking Book and Braille library.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the website and you can do a search for books and you can then download those books. And then I don't use the Braille light, so I don't know if it can go on the internet these days or not.
Do you use a Braille note?
I do.
Oh, really? Brandon uses a Braille note.
So then you put the file onto your device and you can read it. You can read the book.
Ah. Huh. Is it like on MSN Messenger? Kind of like?
No, it's a file that you download and you can sit with your device and just read that book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
For example, like if I wanted a Harry Potter or a Chronicles of Narnia book or something.
Yep.
Maybe I could download. Oh, awesome.
Yep.
Then I could read the book because I download stuff off of my computer.
Well, check with your Braille and Talking Book librarian and tell them that you want to sign up for Web Braille. It's free. You don't have to pay anything for it. And
really?
It's a great service. Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
I will do that, Marlena.
Well, good. Let me know how it goes.
I will. And didn't you say that you've been through like 7 guide dogs or so?
Yes, Madeline is my 7th.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, me and Brendan plan to get guide dogs whenever we get out of school.
Well, great.
Yeah, we will.
Good.
We'll let you know. Yeah, we may call your show together sometime.
Well, that'd be great.
Yeah.
All right.
He says to tell you hello.
Well, you tell him I said hello, too.
I will.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too.
Thanks, Kelly.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
866-666-7926. We could squeeze another call in. Oh, if it was a skinny call, we might be able to squeeze it in. Next week. What are we going to do next week? Well, we're still negotiating next week, so... But I have hopes, I have high hopes that I will be able to bring you a fabulous show next week on cooking. By the way, there's a new program on Mainstream that follows Main Menu. and it's called Cooking in the Dark with Mr. Dale Campbell and Ms. Cheryl Cummings. And Dale tells some pretty, oh gosh, two-thirds of a pun PU, but very funny jokes on his Cooking in the Dark program. So make sure you check it out. It follows Main Menu every week on Mainstream now. So that's going to be, let's see if I can get this straight. It'll be Tuesday nights at 10 in the Eastern in North America, 7 Pacific, and Wednesdays at 2 Universal. I think I've got that right. Goodness gracious, the scheduling police will be out after me if I haven't got it right. The following week, we're still also negotiating, but I want to tell you what it will hopefully be. And I don't yet have an absolute commitment for the date. That's the only issue we're trying to work out. ACB, American Council of the Blind, is involved in a suit against the Social Security Administration. And there's a lot of information about this action, about providing documents in accessible formats, etc. And I'm working with the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund in California to get one of the attorneys who's working on the litigation on the program and one of the complainants, one of the ACB members who is a complainant in the legislation. So stay tuned for that. It's just a matter of getting everyone scheduled and trying to coordinate three different people to do this. But that's a program that you've been asking for, and so I'm going to try to bring that to you on the 4th of June. And then I will be gone for a couple of weeks in June. Gary, the board guy, and I are going to take a cruise to Alaska. So we'll be doing some of the more popular Marlena stuff on the 11th and the 18th of June. We'll probably rerun the Ronnie Millsap one, and I don't know. We'll figure out another really popular show that you all seem to have enjoyed. So if you missed it, hang on and you might hear it on the repeat. Well, that's about it for tonight. It's been great being with you, and I will look forward to next week's show, whatever it may be. But I do think that we're going to be fortunate and have something involving cooking. I'm Marlena, and this is the music of Lee Rettenhauer, a little dolphin dreaming as we go out for this week. It's been a joy to be with you, and I hope you'll come back next week right here on ACB Radio Mainstream. Let me thank the team that helps make all of this happen. That's Chrissy Cochran in the UK, Jeff Shang in Australia, and Gary the board guy in the other room. We'll be back again, same time, same place, next week here on ACB Radio Mainstream. But if you'd like to send me an email in the meantime, you can address it to Marlena. That's MARLAINA at acbradio.org. Till we're together again, have a great week, and we'll see you next time, right here on Mainstream.